This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeder's fueled. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
From the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and fiancé, Nancy.
Hi, from the fort.
From the fort. On today's episode, we're talking about diversity, Crucible, and the future of the expanded universe. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. At the start, hey, we got Bria on the show today. Hi, Bria.
Hey, everyone. I'm back.
I think Bria should be our unofficial third host.
Yeah, you're just going to be our on-rotation host from here on out. Hope you don't mind.
I think I don't have an option.
No, you really don't, so too bad.
Okay.
I guess we should have a word from our sponsors now. Toshi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Toshi-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry.
Now click including the Walking Dead.
Yes! Brand new to Her Universe, The Walking Dead. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast.
You know, I like that our show is going completely off the rail by the time we get to the stingers. Good job, team.
For those of you who didn't join live stream, and you should have, because you would have gotten to hear me setting up a fort during the pre-show.
Yes, to cut down on the echo of Nancy's recording, she is currently in a blanket fort.
No, it's not a blanket. It's a curtain fort. It's old curtains I haven't put away yet.
I'm jealous. That sounds like fun. And someone in the chat points out, you have rails. Good point. Touche. Touche. Well, I guess before we get too further distracted, what's new on the blog, Nancy?
Well, Bria wrote a piece about diversity, and we'll turn it over to Bria now to summarize her argument. If you haven't read it yet, you should go read it. But Bria, tell us about it.
Basically, we need more diversity in the Star Wars universe, because as everyone knows by this point, I recently read 130 expanded universe books, and when I went back and sort of looked at who the lead characters were, if you exclude Skywalker Woman, out of those 130 books, only 15, I think it was, had a lead, or you could say that was that person's story, who was not a straight white male. So that's about 12% for those wondering. So basically, I think that the expanded universe and the sequel trilogy really need to pick up the slack here and have more lead female characters, have more lead characters of color, have more alien characters, because to quote a certain sci-fi writer, Jane Espenson, if I can get my computer to work, if we can't write diversity into sci-fi, then what's the point? You don't create new worlds to give them all the limits of the old ones. So,
amen.
Get on it, Star Wars.
Amen. We obviously have talked about diversity before and what we'd like to see in Star Wars. Can I ask that the sequel trilogy pass the Bechdel test? If you don't know what the Bechdel test, that means that two female characters have a conversation with each other about something other than another male character.
And it's kind of shocking how few pieces of entertainment actually pass the Bechdel test.
Yes. Actually, I think Attack of the Clones passed the Bechdel test, I think, because the Padme talked with, what's her face?
Dorme.
Yes.
Dorme.
And that's all I can think of right now.
Yeah.
There's also Kelly Sue DeConnick's sexy lamp test, which Brian pointed out to me the other day.
Yes, the sexy lamp test. Kelly Sue DeConnick, a comic book writer known for such great pieces these days as Avengers Assemble and the brilliant Captain Marvel comics, said that essentially that if you can take one of your female characters and your work and replace them with a sexy lamp and there's nothing lost, you're a fracking hack.
I want to buy a sexy lamp for my house. But yes, that would also be good. We also would like to see some more protagonists of color, because that would be nice. We got Mace Windu and Lando Calrissian. We can up the bar on that, right?
Please.
And if you for some reason don't want protagonists of color or don't think that Star Wars can have protagonists of color for whatever reason that is, Mace Windu was a badass. Hello. Why would you not want him in your movie? Right? We also need more aliens of leading roles. We're really good with aliens in the background, but we could have some more in a upfront role.
I agree. And you know what? It can't just be Mercy Kill doing all of this. There need to be other books doing this too.
Yeah, like, it seems like we've got a lot of villains that are aliens, but not so much the protagonists unless they're supporting roles. I think that's one of the reasons I liked Mercy Kill so much, because it was a alien main character, which we were not expecting, so.
The prequel trilogy books did a little bit better job with this, with Darth Plagueis, the MedStar books, Cessus Deception, the Yoda book, but aside from that and Mercy Kill, there's really not much.
Mm-hmm. And as to arguments that diversity won't work in Star Wars because people don't want a diverse cast and people won't go see movies that have a diverse cast, what would we say to them, Brian?
Well, first off, Bria, in your piece, what were some of the arguments in the comments against what you were lobbying for?
Oh, the arguments I thought might happen or the ones that actually happened?
Let's start with the ones that actually happened and then the ones you thought might happen.
Let's see here. Hold on, I have to scroll through. Oh, that I'm aiming a little high with wanting to see more diversity. I can read the comment if you
Shouldn't
want.
Shouldn't that just be a baseline?
Yeah, one would hope, but apparently I guess the point is that the movie shouldn't be here to present some ideal or send a message about diversity. It's going to be to make money. And as there already is a formula for making money and it's not broken, I doubt they're going to do too much to fix it. To which I say, this is Star Wars. It's going to make a lot of money no matter what. So,
exactly.
Fix it anyways.
My problem with that argument is the inherent assumption in it that the only demographic that matters and is present within the fandom are white males age 18 to 49.
Which is not true.
I mean, Nancy, what do you think was the gender breakdown at Celebration 6?
I would say half and half.
That's certainly what I noticed. And
yeah.
In this fandom especially, there are female fans. We can't keep pretending that they're not there.
Yeah. Or, Star Wars is really diverse with age now because you've got fans who were adults when the original trilogy came out. And then you've got people who have just discovered Star Wars. So you can't just say Star Wars is for kids or Star Wars is for males 18 to 34 because, you know, go to a Star Wars movie and you'll see people of all ages. Go to a convention, you'll see people of all ages. So, hey, let's give everyone what they want.
Exactly.
And that's stupid because it's saying that people will only go see movies with people who look like them.
And speaking of the other argument, Bria. Yeah.
I'm going to quote this one. The main reason we don't see more diversity is because most of the people reading the books or seeing the movies can't relate to a different species. If you can't relate to the characters and put yourself in their shoes, then it becomes boring. To which I say, bull dinky, you're wrong. And I would point to one of my favorite characters happens to be Bera Sophie, who happens to be an alien. And the last time I checked, I am not an alien. So,
well, it's also saying that the writers are incapable of making you relate to people that are different than you, which is kind of the whole point of all sort of art forms and cinema and books. You know, none of us were reaped to be in the Hunger Games, but most of the people who've read the Hunger Games can sympathize with Katniss Everdeen. Because, you know, we might not have offered to go into a blood sport arena to save our sister, but hell, we all like to think that we would do that, right? And we all cheer her on. So I don't see the difference.
And let's flip this one around a bit. Bria, you and I are people of color.
We are.
Yeah, we are. I hate to break this to you, but we are.
I'm the minority in the podcast.
But have you and I ever had problems relating to a Caucasian character on screen?
No. Yeah. I mean, I haven't.
And hey, who's the character I most relate to in the original trilogy? a male?
Uh-huh. So I don't buy for one second that audiences can't relate to someone on screen that isn't exactly the same demographic they are.
Yeah.
So yeah, agreed. I don't buy it. But were there some other arguments you were expecting?
Oh yeah. I tend to be a little combative when I write these things, so I just went ahead and addressed the ones I thought might happen. So let's see. First, what I thought might happen would be, but the Skywalkers and Sellos are white and they're the main characters, so the leads have to be white. No. No.
They can have friends, right?
Yes. Yes. And
Lando was their friend. Hello.
Well, you need more than one token black guy, I think.
Well, yeah, but I'm just pointing it out, you know.
True. My point, though, was that, like, it's science fiction. The rules of human genetics do not necessarily have to apply. So you can have the Asian actress play Mara and have her still be a redhead by the magic of wigs and hair dye. It's crazy.
What?
I know. We can look okay in red hair. It's a miracle. Let's see. What were the other arguments I had? Sci-fi is for... Oh, I do my whiny voice again. Sci-fi is for men, so the main character should be men. I think we already covered that one.
I think we can get a rant out of Nancy here on this one, though.
Well, go, Nancy, go.
Okay, besides the fact that that's bullshit.
We're going to be swearing a lot on this episode today, just warning you now.
Let's just go to the lowest common denominator, the baseline of the male population. I think I've mentioned this before, but I used to play a lot of World of Warcraft. And I used to think that mostly everyone in my guild was female. You know why? Because they all played female characters. You know why? Because they liked looking at them more. So if you want to go on baseline, why would heterosexual male audience members not want to see a movie with female characters? Like, that's baseline. But then, you know, let's give males some credit. Because you guys are smart people.
Appreciated, thank you.
Yes.
Some of them, I guess.
Yeah. So, that's basically like saying they don't want anything to do with women ever. Like, hello, we live in the world where half people are men and half people are women, so...
They are?
Yes. So, to expect that your entertainment is only going to have the token love interest is really dumb.
Really dumb and really smacks of entitlement a little bit. So
yeah. Like, okay, I will admit that there are times I like going to movies and seeing male characters that are nice looking. And I like them too because they're interesting characters. For example, Thor. So that's basically like saying I won't go see the Avengers, or I didn't like the Avengers because most of them were men.
Well, the difference here is the good-looking male characters actually have depth to their characterization.
Yeah, what about that? Basically, you know, you can have female characters that are pretty or female characters that are not pretty and have a lot of depth. And I say foo hockey to that. That's why I really like Legally Blonde, funnily enough.
It's a good movie.
It is, and it sends a good message that you can be pretty and smart.
I'm sure you got a couple more reasons, a couple more things you were trying to cut off in the past while you were writing this post.
Yeah, basically, okay, whiny voice again, here we go. Alien makeup is elaborate and will take up too much time and money from the budget. And then, audiences can't connect with heroes who don't look like them. Which, you know, old Anki to all of those.
So that means no one liked Yoda?
Clearly.
No one liked Jabba the Hutt?
Well.
No one liked...
R2. There you go, R2.
Everyone likes R2-D2, and he's a freaking robot. Come on.
Hence the point.
You know, all of these excuses just say to me, it's a bunch of people, or it's people who might be subconsciously or consciously thinking that they want to keep the feminism out of my Star Wars.
I don't think wanting more female characters in science fiction or Star Wars should be considered feminism. I think it should just be considered, why the hell not?
I mean, okay, yes, Star Wars is a space opera. It's not the strictest sense science fiction. But come on, it's a big, shiny, futuristic-y, but even though it was in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, you know what I mean. We can do better than the gender roles that have been presented.
Yep.
So much better.
Any parting thoughts on this piece, Bria?
If I do any more thoughts, we'll be here all night. Just give me a Skywalker daughter. Give me some weed characters who happen to be people of color. Just try harder.
I've said this before,
but... You know what would be adorable? If Luke Skywalker isn't married, and he still wanted to have kids, because, you know, our Uncle Georgie did that, adopted children when he wasn't married, he could adopt a little alien baby who is displaced by war.
Aww.
That made me really... Oh, I love that.
Now, I've said
I want to write a fic of that.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Blow up the EU in exchange for a Skywalker daughter.
Yeah. A little Jedi youngling.
All right.
No, he cannot adopt Waru. No.
Shame on you, whoever suggested that in the chat. Shame.
Nut. It was nut.
Of course. What else we got on the blog, Nancy?
Oh, well, let's see. Oh, we have lots of Crucible discussion. We're not going to go into that here because we're going to go into it in Cammy's Concerns. But suffice it to say, Crucible came out and we have opinions.
Yes, we do.
We had a, and we introduced a new feature called Go, No, Go, which is our version of the thumbs up, thumbs down. And we will be reviewing things non-spoilery. So if you want our opinion on whether you should go see things and why wouldn't you, because we're right about everything, You should.
Really?
Unless we disagree, then we're not right about everything.
Much better.
I reviewed Overdraft, the Orion Offensive by John Jackson Miller, which I've been talking about on the podcast. And the last installment came out this weekend, and it was really good. And I was really excited because at the end, there was a sentence that made me really happy that said, let me quote it exactly. Let me see what it said. Follow Surge Sigma again in Overdraft, the Cygnus campaign. And I was like, oh, another one! Yay! So you should go read Overdraft, the Orion Offensive. And then you can read the next book when it comes out.
And right now, the prequel short to Overdraft, Human Error, is a free grab at Amazon.
Yes, it's a short story. I read it earlier today. It's introduces you to one of the main characters of the Orion Offensive. I just really liked the book. It was a lot of fun, and as we'll be discussing later, that was something I really needed. It was a fun space opera. And the characters are engaging, and the plot was interesting. I really liked the universe that John Jackson Miller created, and I kept thinking this would be a great universe to play around with other stories. And I was right! Yay! I love when that happens. And one of the characters is named Private Arcturus Dinner. His name's Private Dinner.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so it's really cool, you should go read it. And this was actually my first introduction to John Jackson Miller, because as we all know, I don't read comics. And it made me really excited to read Kenobi, and more on that later. And also, we have a Tumblr now.
That was the most inevitable thing that's ever been inevitable.
I can't believe it took us this long.
I can't either.
I mean, if I was in charge of all this, then yeah, I could believe it, but yeah.
So, yes, we have a Tumblr now. It's toshi-station.tumblr.com, or if you're like me and you suck at typing in web addresses, link in the show notes. Give us a follow there for bite-sized morsels of our usual fandom inanity.
And pretty GIF sets.
Pretty GIF sets. Very pretty GIF sets.
Lots of handmaidens.
I'm going to curate the queue. I can do what I want.
I can't argue because Bria has taken point on the Tumblr queue.
And who's surprised about that?
Silence. Crickets.
Sorry.
That means I don't have to do it. The less I spend on Tumblr, the better.
Yes, so that's what's new on the blog this week, and with that we move into Fixer's Flash, the segment where we bore you with the details of the geeky things we've been up to. As is usual, Nancy, what have you been up to?
Well, I read Overdraft, go read it. I also read Kenobi, and all I'm going to say right now is that I absolutely positively loved it.
So good!
Yes. I understand now, Bria.
Finally!
I highlighted so much in this book, let's just say. Like, at least one line every five pages had me either laughing or crying. So yes, it's really good, and I'm really excited to talk about it later, and hopefully we're going to interview John Jackson Miller and talk about Kenobi, so that'll be fun. Outside of Star Wars, I've been watching The Babysitter's Club on Netflix because I can, and it's free.
Wow.
Hey, Can I go into a feminism rant about the Babysitter's Club?
Absolutely, go for it.
Okay, so the Babysitter's Club, if you did not grow up as a girl in the 1980s and early 90s, is a middle grade series about a group of babysitters that live in the fictional town of Stony Brook, Connecticut. And they have meetings Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5:30 to 6, and families in the town can call them up and ask for a babysitter. And it's all about their adventures as babysitters and friends, because they're all best friends, and they all love each other. And obviously, when I was a little kid, I wasn't really reading this, thinking, oh, this is great feminist literature. But I really liked they had a TV show. Not the movie. Do not watch the movie. The movie is terrible and awful. But the TV show is actually a really good adaptation. I think it's indicative of how they should do adaptations for all book series. And all the girls are normal looking, first of all. They look like just normal girls, not movie stars. And they're not fighting over boys. It's about their friendships and stuff, and that's really cool, and I want little girls to watch this and first marvel at the hair and clothes, and then realize that, you know, friends are important, and you should be friends with your friends and not fight with them over boys. That's my feminist rant about the Babysitter's Club.
Come for the hair and clothes, stay for the feminist themes.
Yes. You don't believe me, but it's a. There are boys in the books. Yes, they. Logan Bruno is the boy babysitter and Marianne's boyfriend, but they're not. They're not fighting necessarily over the boys. They might have disagreements or arguments every once in a while, but they're not like, you stole my boyfriend, and I like this boy, and oh, I like him too. Blah blah blah.
You know, I never thought this podcast would have a brief little segment on the Babysitter's Club. I love this podcast.
You obviously don't have much faith in me. But yes, so if you were a female who read the Babysitter's Club, or even a male that read the Babysitter's Club, you should go watch them. I'm going to make Brian watch an episode just so he'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Complete opposite to the Babysitter's Club, I started my latest book, which is not about babysitters.
No, I've seen your outline. This is very much the opposite.
But it is about girls. Well, two girls at least. There are boys in it too. And I can say this now because I signed my contract. I sold a short story.
Hooray! Congratulations.
Yay!
I sold my first short story, and it will be released in Plasma Frequency magazine on August 5th, I believe. So we'll link it.
Awesome. I'm going to need to print out a copy and have you sign it, just so you're aware.
Okay. You can order a copy. You can order print versions. Ooh. And you can order electronic versions for free, so no one has an excuse not to read my story. Also, I was thinking about this on the way home, that the main character's name is Brian.
Oh. Huh.
I wonder where I got that name from.
Yeah, no idea. is that all in your court, Nancy?
Yep, that's it.
Well, as for me, I also finished Kenobi, and if you're one to take advice blind from us, go pre-order this book now.
Yes.
Please. It's great. Fantastic. I don't want this to sound too hyperbolic, but I would say it's one of the five best expanded universe novels of the last decade.
It basically exceeded all my expectations, met and exceeded them. It was basically exactly what I wanted the book to do.
This is a book that's like Darth Plagueis and Stover's Revenge of the Sith novelizations. One of those rare books that makes the films better.
Yes.
So, that's all we can say for now, but seriously, go buy it. It's amazing. Excellent book. You will not be disappointed.
Yep.
I've got a bit of TV to discuss as well. It's not the Babysitter's Club, though.
Doing it wrong.
I know. I finally started watching Arrested Development. I'm only years late to this party, but I'm finally watching it. And I have to say, just like after I watched Mean Girls, the internet suddenly makes more sense.
Really?
Yes. So, yes, I made a huge mistake not watching it sooner. Oh, well. I also bought a copy of Dawn of the Jedi Into the Void. That's going to be one of the next books I read. I'm very excited. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yay, finally, you took my advice.
You're going to have to read it when you're done.
I think you might have my copy. Or do I have it here? Oh, no, I've still got it here. Okay, I'll bring that with me.
I would hope so.
Yes, so that's my next book, Dawn of the Jedi Into the Void, which I'm told features a female character that isn't a love interest or part of a love focus.
Indeed, it is excellent.
What a novel concept.
I would like to add that there is nothing wrong with having a romance as long as it's not all the character is for.
Yes, I agree.
Yes. I agree, but it was nice to see this in a book because you've seen plenty of, you know, male protagonists without any romances, but you never get to see a female protagonist without a romance. So.
Very true.
Excellent. So, Bria, what have you been up to?
Well, I decided to rewatch Revenge of the Sith and then reread Kenobi because certain staff members finally got around to finishing the book a month after we got them. I don't know who I'm talking about here, of course.
Of course not.
They both already had to put up with me G-chatting them the other night going, tell me all your feelings and emotions about this book right now. But obviously I'm going to chime in and tell everyone to go pre-order the book, whether or not you want to take our advice blindly or not, because it is actually that good.
And unless you don't want to read good books, then you shouldn't.
Yeah, if you don't want to read good books, yeah, don't pre-order it.
Yeah. Oh, although I will suggest to everyone that, like, the week leading up to Kenobi coming out, you should go rewatch the prequel trilogy.
Good Lord, do you want to destroy these people and put them into an emotional coma?
Yes.
No. Don't listen to her.
No, it
helps. She's going down a path you can't follow.
It helps make the book even more emotional and, like, that, you know, you have that in the back of your mind. I'm just saying, it works really well. So.
Oh, you know what you should try next is reading the Stover novelization and then Kenobi.
Oh, God.
I have a stack of books on my floor that I need to read first. But let's see. Continuing on the I hate my emotions and think they deserve to be punished train, I rewatched Dollhouse.
Oh, Bria.
Yeah, I know.
Why do you do this to yourself?
Because I have nothing better to do. I don't know. Well, I love all the actors in that show and really want to know why Sierra and Victor, especially Victor, didn't get Emmy nominations for their work. And because belonging destroys me emotionally, and I love that episode. You should all watch Dollhouse if you haven't. It's some of the episodes are a little iffy, but the overall seasons are really, really good.
Well, after about six episodes, when it got away from the Eliza Dushku plot of the week and started focusing on the other brilliant cast members that Joss Whedon had assembled, the show became stellar.
Did you do that on purpose, Brian?
Do what on
purpose?
Did you
just say that Joss Whedon had assembled?
That was not on purpose, but I like my subconscious right about now.
Oh, and then I guess aside from Dollhouse, because I apparently also, again, hate myself and decided to watch the show before making dinner one night. And when I live in a house filled with antlers, I just started watching Hannibal.
Okay, sidebar. Yes. I know nothing about this show other than what I see on Tumblr. What I understand is cannibalism, which Hannibal, yes. And something about a deer.
Yeah, there's a lot of like deer and elk symbolism going on, and like in the first episode there, or the second episode, whichever one it was, they end up in this shed that's just basically filled with deer antlers everywhere. And it's a huge part of everything, but I apparently just hate myself and try to gross myself out, so by accident. So I watched it before making dinner one night. It was a good call.
See,
it's a good show, though.
If I go by Tumblr, this isn't a show about a serial killer. It's a show about surrealism.
I'm 4 episodes in, but that sounds about right so far.
Oh, lovely. All right, that's Fixer's Flash this week. And with that, we go into Deke's Dirt, news from around fandom, and we start with more Disney Parks rumors.
Yes. The Orlando Business Journal is saying that the inevitable Star Wars addition to the Disney parks will be the largest ever. So I would think that the Orlando Business Journal is probably a knowledgeable source on these matters. But yeah, they're not saying anything. So we're left to speculate and say, just gimme, grabby hands, please.
I want Disney in the parks.
You want Disney in the parks?
I want Star Wars in the Disney parks. I'm so excited I can't formulate words and things.
I know, right?
I would be absolutely down with this. The multi-park angle is an interesting approach that has been talked about.
Yeah, they're saying it's going to not just be confined to Hollywood Studios, but they didn't say exactly how it would spread across all the parks, which I think is kind of weird because, I mean, it's not like all the Mickey Mouse stuff is confined to Magic Kingdom. Like, you can find Mickey Mouse stuff all over the place, and you can find Star Wars stuff at the Magic Kingdom. You can buy Star Wars stuff in Tomorrowland, so it'd be interesting what they mean by, you know, if they mean rides or, you know, themed entertainment or what. I think the Star Wars themed entertainment will stay in Hollywood Studios, but I wouldn't be surprised to see more Star Wars stuff being sold in Epcot or Magic Kingdom and that stuff.
Wow, so we might actually have a reason to go to the Animal Kingdom.
Hey, the Animal Kingdom's cool. Don't hate.
Busch Gardens is better. I'm sorry. I like Busch Gardens a lot. That's my animal park.
There we go. Moving on. Paul S. Kemp says his duology is on standby and cites Disney and the sequel trilogy being the cause.
Raise your hand if you are surprised. My hand is down.
My hand is down, too. You know, I have a hard time with this one because it seemed like such vapor long before the Disney deal happened.
Yeah, this was kind of announced and then not really ever talked about again, except to say that Paul Kemp had sent in an outline and they were talking about it and that it was going to be badass or something. But considering it has to, it's on standby now, and for those reasons, I'm guessing it takes place in the post Return of the Jedi era. It's interesting though that, because I know the Paul Kemp duology was announced that it was existing before they announced Sword of the Jedi. So it's
they
interesting
announced it
that,
back when Mercy Kill was initially announced,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, somewhere around then.
I think that was around Celebration 5.
Yeah, so it's been going on that long, and yet they still haven't said anything about Sword of the Jedi. As far as we know, it's still go. So it'll be interesting. We're going to talk about this later on too, but
well, in additional expanded universe news, Empire and Rebellion Razor's Edge, the Leia novel by Martha Wells got a blurb, and Nancy will now give a dramatic reading.
Yes, I will. Times are desperate for the Rebel Alliance. Harassment by the Empire and a shortage of vital supplies are hindering completion of a new secret base on the ice planet Hoth. So when mid-rim merchants offer much-needed materials for sale, Princess Leia Organa and Han Solo lead an Alliance delegation to negotiate a deal. But when treachery forces the rebel ship to flee into territory controlled by pirates, Leia makes a shocking discovery. The fierce marauders come from Leia's homeworld of Alderaan, recently destroyed by the Death Star. These refugees have turned to pillaging and plundering to survive, and they are in debt to a pirate armada, which will gladly ransom the princess to the vengeful Empire if they find out her true identity. Struggling with intense feelings of guilt, loyalty, and betrayal, Leia is determined to help her wayward kinspeople, even as Imperial forces are closing in on her own crippled ship. Trapped between lethal cutthroats and brutal oppressors, Leia and Han, along with Luke, Chewbacca, and a battle-ready crew, must defy death, or embrace it, to keep the rebellion alive.
And for reaction, we turn to Bria.
You have reached the life model decoy of Bria. She currently cannot come to the podcast because she is rolling around on the ground and crying from emotions about Alderaan. Please leave a message.
So, Bria, I wager you're a little excited for this book.
Very.
Alderaanian pirates!
Alderaan!
The only way you could be more excited about this book is that if Winter is also part of the battle-ready crew.
So help me God, if Winter is in this book and is speaking to, and has, like, talks with Leia,
They could pass the mental test. I think we need to question Jen Heddle on whether Winter makes an appearance, so we know to get smelling salts for Bria.
Boy, if she turns up in the dramatis personae.
I wish I wasn't being overdramatic about this.
I can attest that Bria's not exaggerating. She will be a puddle of emotions if.
Do you remember her after Scoundrels, people?
Yes.
Do you remember me when they announced Winter was going to be in Scoundrels?
And then when one of us told you that Winter didn't know Leia was still alive in the book?
I think I was on vacation in London at the time and just sort of collapsed to the ground for a few minutes.
Oh, dear.
But yes, that's Empire and Rebellion. Looks really interesting. Yay.
They really should just keep moving the release date up a couple weeks till we get it, like, in July. No, in August. That'd be good.
That release date has slipped up a whole month now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I think so. It's, what, September 24th?
Yeah, yep. I think originally it was October 24th, somewhere in that window.
Yeah.
So.
And finally, Disney is planning to have a large Star Wars presence at the D23 Expo. They also said today, I think, that they're going to have Star Wars actors there.
Well, it's rumored by insiders.
Rumored. Yes, of course, rumored. And also, coming up, we've got Comic-Con, which is July 18th to the 21st, and Celebration Europe 2, July 26th to the 28th. So hopefully we'll get some exciting news. And we're going to be posting this tomorrow on the blog, but Mark Newbold, who was on our show a few weeks ago from Jedi News UK, started with his co-owner, James Burns, their Caravan of the Force, which will raise money for Make-A-Wish. And it's kind of like the Course of the Force for leading up to Celebration in Europe. So they're going to help raise money for Make-A-Wish, and Boba Fett himself and his wife will be on board. So if you are around in that area, be sure to check it out and check out their website to see how you can help out. That's a really cool idea.
Absolutely. We're going to have more details on that on the blog tomorrow. And as a sidebar, for Celebration Europe coverage, you guys really need to be following Jedi News UK.
Yes, they will be there. And we're going to have Mark back on the show after Celebration Europe to talk about Celebration Europe and tell him how jealous we are.
Speaking of conventions, San Diego Comic-Con is next week. There is a Del Rey Star Wars panel that will be there. I don't think there'll be much in the way of announcements, but there might be some interesting tidbits leaking out. If some stuff gets out that sounds interesting, we will blog it, of course.
Yeah, I know. I don't think the Del Rey people are going to be at Celebration Europe, so I'm assuming if there are going to be any announcements, that they will be at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So, but I'm hoping that there are other announcements going to be coming out of Celebration Europe.
Yes, and to wrap up San Diego Comic-Con, we're going to have Amy Ratcliffe on the podcast in a couple of weeks to discuss that.
Yes, we've been wanting to have her on the show for a while, so this gave us a good excuse.
So yes, that'll be neat. And one final little bit of news. A new release out right now is William Shakespeare's Star Wars. Get thee to a bookstore.
I actually heard this is really funny, so I might have to buy it.
Yeah, I gotta go find a copy. It looks neat. And with that last little bit of news, we move into Cammy's Concerns, our discussion topic of the week. Okay. spoilers incoming. Crucible. We're going to talk Crucible, do a quick little roundtable review of the book, and discuss where the expanded universe should go from here.
Yes.
So,
elsewhere.
Yes. Crucible. Spoilers, if you're waiting to read the book, come back to this episode in a couple of weeks after you've read it, and...
I don't think we're going to be talking about major spoilers, like plot-wise, just
we general. Might.
Well, yeah.
We might, but just to be safe, if you don't want to hear anything about the book right now, check back in this episode when you're done. Because we's going to talk about it.
Yep.
Well, here's the thing. We were not fans.
No, let's just get this out right away. We did not like this book.
We fucking hated it.
We had two full-length reviews. Bria wrote one and I wrote one, and they're probably the harshest reviews we've got on the blog.
I didn't write one.
I almost felt bad writing it, but then I remembered how bad the book was.
This is the thing. I'm at a loss for words to describe this book. This book was supposed to be a bookend for three of the most important characters in the franchise. It was supposed to be an accessible standalone that you didn't need excessive expanded universe knowledge to pick up. It was supposed to be a tidy little conclusion for Luke, Han, and Leia, and it failed at just about every count.
Yeah, this book was not what was advertised.
It was a huge bait and switch.
Yeah. Last year when they announced it, a lot of people were kind of annoyed that the first thing they announced going forward in the timeline after Fate of the Jedi is another big three book. And I actually wrote a blog defending Troy Denning and Crucible and asking people to give it a chance. And I was wrong.
I recall you said that if this book was written like he wrote Tatooine Ghost, it could be a decent book.
Yes, I like Tatooine Ghost. I still do like Tatooine Ghost. It's a standalone that you don't need to know a lot about other stuff to get. And still includes some stuff from, you know, various continuity parts of the saga. But Crucible, it's basically the postscript to Fate of the Jedi. You know, I wanted an end to the big three. This was not an end to the big three. It was an end to Fate of the Jedi. I was thinking about it today, and I'm like, this book was completely and utterly unnecessary. Because, spoilers for the end of the book, Luke has a revelation that they are going to retire now.
Oh, great! So it's the unifying force!
Well, yeah, it's the unifying force. Well, to be fair, they didn't really have that revelation at the end of the unifying force. But, you know, whether or not you think they should have is a whole nother argument. But they could have came to the same conclusion at the end of Apocalypse, and it would have made way more sense. You know, Apocalypse ended with Jaina's wedding. You know, Aboloth was defeated. Dala is no longer in power. They're trying to get the galaxy back on track. Luke has been injured. Hey, that would be a fantastic time to retire and have it make sense. Why do you need this book to do that? You know, if you want to have a standalone adventure story, that's one thing. But it basically seemed like the whole book, the whole point of this book was to have them come to a realization at the end that they're going to walk off into the sunset.
Yeah, and well, let's talk about this book from a macro level. From a high level, it was boring and it was badly written.
I mean, generally, there are some books in EU I don't like. Generally, I'll say, okay, they were well written. It's just not my thing. And I mean, I know that Troy Denning can write because I've read it before. I was floored by the info dumps that were in this book and the really bad clunky prose. Like, it read to me like a first or second draft that he hadn't taken the time to go back and make better. And I know, because I've written some really shitty first drafts, and that's why you go back and edit them. And I was just like, really? This is not good.
And then to top it off, it's just filled with all of these unnecessary torture scenes. There's actually a game where, you know, you're playing for different levels of pain. And Han loses an eye. That was unnecessary.
It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Yeah, then it's
then
Crucible.
Then gets a slightly used one.
I had to say it.
I get that this is a franchise that has a running count on lightsaber-induced limb dismemberment. But come on! Han and Leia pretty much get blown up at one point.
Yeah, I was reading a lot of reviews today, and it was funny how basically everyone pointed out that Luke and Leia are so powerful that they spent most of the book in healing trances to recover from their horrible, debilitating injuries. There's a author that I follow her blog. Her name is Deborah Doyle, and she happens to be one of the co-authors of Mage World.
Great series. You should read it.
Yes. And she had a blog post that stuck with me about how if you want to, you know, sideline a character or have a character, you know, injure a character for a fight scene or whatever, just to make it more tense, a sprained ankle does just as much as breaking both their legs. You know, basically saying you don't have to give them the horrible, most horrible, harshest of injuries to have to complicate their physicality.
Although, let's talk about why Denning cripples these characters so often.
Because he makes them uber gods.
Denning writes the Force like you're playing a video game, you've gotten into the debug screen, and you've entered in god mode. So his only choice to make these action scenes believable is to cripple them.
Yeah, it's like back in Bantam when Luke used to get injured in every book because that's the only way they could write him as not all-powerful. And this is why, you know, people have said that they don't like Zahn because he writes the Force less powerful. That's why I appreciate him, because his characters, yeah, the Jedi are a little more powerful, but there's consequences to their powers. Brian, do you remember that writing workshop we went to with Timothy Zahn, the 101 Ideas in an Hour or something like that?
Yes, fantastic panel. If you ever get a chance to go to 101 Ideas in an Hour with Timothy Zahn, you should.
Yeah, so basically it was him throwing out all these questions and ideas that you should consider when you're creating a plot, characters, make world building, etc., etc. And one of the things was when you're talking about your magic, whatever magic system you have, that you need to ask questions about it to have it make sense. And one of them is, what are the consequences of your magic? You know, you can't just have someone be able to throw a spell and not have it have any effect, whether it needs a lot of energy or you have to be trained to do magic or something to that nature. And he points to the whole, you know, Yoda lifting the X-Wing, that, you know, it wasn't just something, you know, easy that he could do without just not caring, you know, that it was an effort. And you see that in the prequels after he fights with Dooku and fights with Palpatine. You know, he's throwing these pods around, but it still seems to have some sort of physical exertion from him. Point being is that, you know, Denning has no sort of repercussions for using the Force. You basically use the Force. It's like a video game. You choose your power and you do it. You don't have, you know, they don't have a physical reaction, and there's no way to counteract it. How are you going to counteract a Jedi? You cripple them, basically. That's all you can do.
So, and then there's the flip side of that, because then you have Denning writing characters going, oh, well, if you're not a Jedi, you can't do anything to help us out here.
I thought you were exaggerating about that.
No.
And I got to that part and I really was like, what? Like, if you haven't read the book, what happens is that they're, you know, planning to go rescue Han at the end, and they basically tell Lando that he can't help because he's not a Jedi. And I said, excuse me? Are you talking to Lando freaking Calrissian, who blew up the second Death Star, with Wedge Antilles, who also cannot use the Force? You are wrong.
And then there's earlier in the book where Luke makes this backhanded insult to Jax, like, yeah, not bad for someone who can't use the Force. If his uncle had been there, he would have slapped you.
His uncle, his father. Why did Jaina not slap him? Why did Jag not slap him?
I thought Corin was going to, because Corin was the only person who had his head screwed on straight in that scene.
Let's contemplate that for a moment. There's this scene in the second chapter of the book where they are observing a Jedi Padawan going through this obstacle course, and he is being cocky and arrogant because he's doing well. Because he's a teenage boy, and a Jedi. So, yeah. Hello, Luke Skywalker was arrogant and cocky. So Luke is saying that they have to kick him out of the Jedi Order because he's too arrogant and they can't train their enemies anymore. And I'm like, who are you? And what have you done with Luke Skywalker?
And it's Corin who speaks up and goes, no, don't do that. We need to be more humble.
Corin is the voice of reason. I love Corin, but Corin Horn was the voice of reason.
Corin Horn, the most arrogant person in the galaxy far, far away, is telling Luke that he is overreacting. Also, Jaina.
Yeah. A moment of silence as we all connect our foreheads to our desks here.
Yeah, that scene was completely unnecessary. That scene also established the thing that made me angriest about the book. And I believe I texted you, Brian, and told you what I had just read, and you were flabbergasted. Is that Ben Skywalker is now working with Tahiri Vella.
You know what? I do want to talk. I do want to talk about this one, but I want to go back a little bit because I'm going to turn on the rant machine for that. Bria, I know you've got some points you want to make about how characters are used in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you need to know is that there are these villains called the Kalumi, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
I have no idea.
Lome Calamite, I don't know.
Calamite, whatever the hell they're called.
Big head.
And they're basically these big brain guys who want to, like, take over the galaxy and get themselves force powers and other crap like that. So they have hired Mirta Gev and a bunch of Mandalorians and also Savara Rain, a.k.a. Vistara, to you know, be their sort of, like, security enforcers and get stuff done for them. I happen to really love both characters. I was really upset in the end of Fate of the Jedi when Luke seemed to forget what the word redemption means in the past 40 years and was like, nope, Vistara can't be saved. She can't be turned from the dark side. She's evil. You know, not like that guy, Vader.
And then, of course, she, you know, does exactly that and turns against them.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
So, point is, when I saw the list of main characters, I was excited because, hey, Vistara, Mirta, I've missed Mirta for 10 books now. I wish neither one of them had been in this damn book because it was such a cripping disservice to both of them that I can't. Mirta, okay, at one point, Mirta, Mandalorian warrior, is put in a slinky dress. And I run a freaking fashion blog. I have no problem with slinky dresses. There is a time and a place for a slinky dress. And there is a certain, you know, some people wear slinky dresses, some people don't. Mirta is not. And she's basically objectified the whole criffing book. And it makes me mad. And she could have been replaced by either a sexy lamp or some random Mandalorian commander, and almost none of the story would have changed except for the fact that she was working for them because they were going to give her some nanotechnology to beat the virus that they infected that the Imperials infected Mandalore with, so she and Boba Fett can go home. That's the only reason she's there, because apparently that's the only reason anyone who's a Fett can do anything anymore.
And Vistara's there because she can't go back to the Lost Tribe and she can't go to the One Sith. So she's going to work with these evil bad guys for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. And she's just basically the random sexy Darksider because everyone, the freaking Kalumi are just like, oh God, Vistara's so hot. I mean, not literally like that, but I mean, there's all these creepy thoughts about it. And I'm like, she's not even 18. Can we not?
Can we discuss how they were talking about them being 18 and 19? I was like, no, you can't do math. Ugh. Ben was born in 26.5 ABY. That would make him like just about 18, not 19. Also, when they mentioned that he and Vistara were former lovers, I almost fell on the floor laughing.
God, they made out. Come on.
They were not former lovers, because although I have my issues with Luke, I think he would do better than that on his own spaceship.
Yeah.
And also, like, the fact that they only kissed in Ascension, and then they had, like, no time after that to really be together.
They cuddled. That's not being a lover.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that was just basically, let's create some angst. Let's create parallels between Luke and his dead wife, who we didn't bother to mention when Luke was having an out-of-body experience.
Why would you ever do that?
Why would you do that? But yeah. We don't like the way these characters are used.
I mean,
I want farm boy Luke back. Stop the de-farm boyization of Luke Skywalker now.
But as far as Mirta Gev and Vistara go, they exist in this book for no other reason to be utterly objectified.
Nope. Makes me angry. My only saving grace with this is that they go off together at the end, and in my head, they're going to go have nothing to do with the Jedi, and have nothing to do with, like, thwarting plans and other crap like that, and they're just gonna go travel the galaxy's heterosexual life partners and be awesome. Sorry, I'm good.
Now I forgot what I was going to say.
You know, we haven't even touched on how Leia was creepily objectified again in this book.
And then there was creepy Leia.
Okay, that I just got the feeling with creepy Leia that we were getting way too much insight into the author's psyche.
I just don't know.
I think we need to clarify for people who haven't read the book that at one point the Kalumi they create these like clone biots, and at some point they get Han and Leia's DNA and they create like a 20-something year old Leia, and who doesn't have any of her memories, obviously, but she has it's really weird, and she runs into Han, and Han keeps thinking of her as creepy Leia. And at
because
one point,
she's
she goes,
acting like
Are you
this
my father?
Brainwashed sex doll.
Yeah. Creepy Leia.
This is one of the most disheartening aspects of the book. The treatment of female characters in this book, it's a huge step back from the great things the Expanded Universe has been doing this year. And it's incredibly disappointing.
I remember what I was going to say now.
Go for it.
I was speaking of being Jedi. Why is Tahiri a Jedi? And I don't mean because, you know, she was all bad. I mean, wasn't at the end of Fate of the Jedi that she wasn't going to be a Jedi anymore, right? Like that. I remember her being like the Jag's hand or whatever. And I thought she was going to be all like on her own. And now all of a sudden she's back with the Jedi with no sort of explanation. And I just thought that was weird. But that would just be fitting to forget the plot threads from the last series.
And speaking of forgetting plot threads from the last series, let's go to the biggest out-of-universe problem I had with this book, and one that I think is frankly inexcusable. Ben and Tahiri are working together.
In case you've forgotten, there was a scene in Invincible in which Tahiri is torturing Ben. I have not actually read this book because I don't want to. So, Bria, perhaps you could explain it better for the audience.
And let's start with a couple trigger warnings because we're going to need them for this.
Yeah. Basically, she's molesting him with her hand. It's really creepy.
It describes, doesn't it? Like, because I know someone posted the XR on TFN Lit, and it was basically like her hand was dipping below his shorts.
Hands, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that
14
would.
14 at the time.
He's like, yeah, that would be better. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? No. Don't do that.
This is while he's a prisoner.
And people have said, well, you know, why is that any better or worse than torture? I'm not saying that physical torture is okay. Obviously, it's not. But there are some things that are just not right, no matter how you frame it. And molesting underage kids, and that's what he is. I don't care that he was killing people. Is never okay.
So that shouldn't have gotten into the Legacy of the Force to begin with, just because it violates what we have a mutual friend who calls this the SVU rule. If this is something that would show up on an episode of Law & Order SVU, it should not make it to print, especially in the Star Wars universe. So that was bad, inexcusable, should never have happened.
And it also completely, you know, threw away any good that, not good as in, you know, her character being good or bad, but anything good in Tahiri's characterization. You know, that girl went through a lot, and I was rooting for her, and I feel like that Tyra Banks gift, oh, we're rooting for you, we were all rooting for you.
How could you?
I was rooting for her after New Jedi Order, because she went through hell, and I loved when she was with the race, and they called her Aunt Tahiri, and that was hilarious. You know, I was like, okay, this girl's doing good, and then they decided to, A, make her obsessed with her long-dead boyfriend. I realized that, you know, having your boyfriend die is tragic, but, you know, eventually you move on, and she could just, you know, have nice memories of Anakin once in a while, not turn to the Sith. And also, like, the fact that it's perpetuating that whole horrible evil women being sexy trope, which is why I dislike a lot of female villains in media, because they try to make them sexy. basically saying that's all they can be. I'm like, no, if you want Tahiri to be evil, make her evil. At least I will say one thing. With Dala, she was weird, but they didn't try to make her a sex object. They gave her a creepy Bothan boyfriend, but they didn't make her a sex object.
Exactly. So, okay. That's not good. In Legacy of the Force, Tahiri molests an underage Ben. Bad. Mm-hmm. Now to Crucible. They are on the same mission working together, alone. And everyone is pretending like this didn't happen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This can be interpreted as a tacit endorsement of what she did to him.
Yeah, because it's okay now. Which, people are saying you can't have it both ways. You can't have... You can't want to have Luke redeem people and then not be okay with Ben working with Tahiri. No, that's not what it is. I'm fine with Tahiri being redeemed and all. I do have an issue with the fact that, you know, it's so black and white on the issue. Like, you have people like Kip Duran who killed millions and trillions of people and never really paid for it. And then you have Luke being like, no, Vistara can't ever be good. But basically, point being is that I don't have a problem with Tahiri being a Jedi. I don't have a problem with her being redeemed. I do have a problem with her working with Ben because of the history. And it makes me think that Luke is even more of an idiot than he's being portrayed. Because, dear God, why would you put your son with her? And people are saying, well, it shows how Ben is forgiving. I'm like, yes, but you're making light of sexual abuse because people who are sexually abused probably would not want to be with their abuser no matter how redeemed they are.
Listen, this is a problem not from a Star Wars universe or a narrative perspective. This is a problem that transcends the universe. This has created an actual real life issue with this book.
I mean, I don't know why any of the editors didn't sit down or say, hey, Troy, having Tahiri do that to a 14-year-old kid probably isn't a good idea, and you should rewrite that scene to have her torture him. Just formally.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's fine. That's bad. But now here we are pretending that it didn't happen.
And
that's worse.
And it did not have to be Tahiri. It could have been anyone else in the Jedi Order. That was a perfect opportunity to create a new character for Ben to be with and of Ben's age. But no, they had to use Tahiri for some reason. And that, you know, that brings me back to one of my main complaints is that, you know, moving forward in the timeline is when you're supposed to create new characters. And yet it seems like the best they do with creating new characters is when they go back in the timeline.
I have to be honest. This is one of those topics that there's no way I can temper my anger with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to impulsively say that this book deserves all the scorn that's heaped on it just for that.
Agreed.
This should not have made it into print that back in Legacy of the Force, and once you'd committed to that, you could not let Ben and Tahiri work together now because it is a host of horrible precedences, and it says horrible things. At best, it's negligence. At worst, it's a tacit endorsement of sexual assault and molestation.
Or the whole idea that it's not a big deal because, you know, Ben was a boy, and it's like the whole thing with, you know, teachers sleeping with their students, and they're like, man, I wish my teachers were like that when I was in high school. No! That's not okay!
I mean, I see what they were trying to do here to show that Tahiri was redeemed, but the message is lost. It's lost because there was not enough care put in, and it's created this incredible trigger warning filled problem, and it does not send a good message, and I'm sorry, it's horribly disappointing it made it into this book.
Yep.
Sorry, Bria, we've been ranting over the top of you for a little while.
You're good. You guys are saying everything I was going to say anyway, so you have more feelings about this than I do, Vero. I mean, I have the feelings, but you guys know what I mean.
The disappointing thing is this is an incredibly problematic part of the book, but it's going to get washed out because there are so many other problems with this book.
Yeah.
And one thing I regret is that I didn't call more attention to it in my review. I should have, but I didn't.
The only explanation I can possibly think of is that the editors did what I did and managed to block that scene from their memories in Invincible. Because I honestly managed to up until I think Nancy was reminding me about it when I was nearing Legacy of the Force. And then I went, oh, crap, that did happen. It's the only explanation I can think of. They forgot about it.
Yeah, and well, I know that the editors between the editors now are not the same editors who were there then. It's Frank Parisi and Jen Heddle who are running things now. They were not here during Legacy of the Force.
Yeah.
So, in that case, it's really on Troy's shoulders not to create these problematic
things.
Well,
Troy's the one who wrote it in the first place, so we shouldn't really be surprised. This isn't the Star Wars that I... What happened to the Star Wars that I used to know?
I think that right here might be a good time to mention that we're not attacking Troy Denning as a person in this podcast.
Because he's a really nice guy. He is.
Yeah, we're just upset with the book. I mean, this is not a personal attack. We promise. You know, like I actually really enjoyed Star by Star, but just this book is so criffing problematic in so many ways.
I can't talk about this book. A book that has these kind of social problems and not get really angry.
I think it's part of the problem with having the same authors write so many books in Star Wars, and it's not, you know, there's been prolific authors before, but you know, Aaron Austin has wrote, you know, the Wraith books, and even though he has written a lot in the recent era, I don't feel like his books have as much effect on the rest of the universe. I don't know. I can't really say for sure because I haven't read Legacy of the Force, but and a lot of the other authors just kind of stick to their own little wheelhouse and or go through a lot of different eras like Zahn. I think there's some merit to people saying we need new blood. You know, it's always great when Zahn comes back and writes a Star Wars book, but having one author basically guide your universe is not a good thing. It's the same problem with having the New Jedi Order be so long, is because if you don't like it, you're screwed.
And I know they've danced around this, but it certainly feels like Troy Denning has the most gravitas of any of the authors writing in this era.
Yeah.
And if this is what he's going to do, if he's going to introduce these problematic things into the universe, then this book is kind of the signal. It kind of signals what we've suspected for a while, that the expanded universe stopped being Star Wars a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's a good time to transition to the next segment. And
Yes, because this
stop
dead
beating the crucible yeah. dead horse.
This dead EOP is thoroughly beaten.
Because yeah. while you know we dislike the book, we also want to focus on the positive.
It was just not a good end for the big three.
No,
at all.
So now is the part where we ask, where do we go from here? Ryan, you don't have that song, do you?
I don't. Sorry, I'm still working on a soundboard.
You fail.
Aww.
So what don't I? This book obviously wasn't the bookend we were looking for. We said as much in our review. I mean, I don't think any of us are going to recommend this be a purchase that you make.
No.
I mean, if you're an expanded universe completionist, go find it at the library.
Yep.
But
or wait for it in paperback.
Yeah, wait for it in paperback. Go find it at the library. And I know it sounds like we've been harsh on the expanded universe today, but I want to say, especially going into this next little bit of the discussion, that there has been great things done with the expanded universe this year. Up until this point, the only really meh book of the year was The Last Jedi. Everything else has been really stellar.
Yep.
There are good things happening, and I truly believe there are more good things coming. So where do we go from here?
Well, I think we need to first ask if Sword of the Jedi is going to happen or if it's not.
Well, I really hope it is.
The question is,
should it happen? Because I want it to happen because Jaina deserves a book. She deserved a book years ago. I wish that Darkness would have been a book about Jaina, would have been a trilogy focusing on Jaina and Jason instead. But it wasn't. I just really don't want to read anything else in the Legacy era. I just really don't. I don't like this era. I don't like the characters that they have.
I can be fine with continuing to write books in the Legacy era because I do actually still really care about characters like Jaina Solo, even though I think the last 15 years in universe have been unnecessarily harsh to her. But I think that if the Sword of the Jedi trilogy doesn't go forward, it'll just be bad. Like especially if they continue to write books in this expanded universe, I think that losing three books with a female lead, it's not good. It's not a good message at all. And Jaina deserves this. Like you said, she deserves to have a trilogy of books. Come on.
A trilogy of books about a female character written by a female author. This is a good thing that this franchise, that this fandom needs.
And the love triangle is gone, so this will be about her.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to happen. The Kemp duology being on standby is definitely not a good sign, but I hope it does. I hope the book still happens.
Yeah. It's so hard to speculate what's going to happen with the expanded universe when they haven't said anything. And it's not like I'm blaming them for not saying anything, because I'm sure they have no idea what's going to happen either. I think it would be nice for them to continue this timeline as an EU type thing where it's just its own little entity.
Hey, my multiverse theory.
Yes. And they're already doing it with the standalones. Hopefully they'll actually stand alone this time. I kind of touched on this before, but they really need to make new characters. And this is one of my pet peeves with the expanded universe.
And I swear, at least once a month we harp on this subject.
Yeah, it's that, see, when a book goes back in the timeline, and back in the timeline, I mean it's during the Rebellion era or, you know, something like Kenobi. I always hope that it's going to focus on a pre-existing character. Like, I would love a series with Card, with young Card. or Mara as a smuggler, or, you know, something of that nature. Like, you know, when Zahn announced his Rebellion era books, you know, we had Mara in them. And then the next book we had Thrawn and Pelion, and people were like, oh, Zahn's using those characters again. That's all I could write about. Well, when you're going back in the timeline, why would you not write about characters that people like? That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go back and expand on characters that people like, because that's the only time we can do that. Because Pelion's dead, Mara's dead, Thrawn's dead. Yet when it comes to the books that go forward in a timeline, it seems like that all they do is use pre-existing characters. And that's the time when you want to create new characters, because then you can use them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, which is why these new Empire and Rebellion books, I'm looking forward to them so much.
Yeah, because they're going back and they're using them. I know they will probably not use all the EU characters I want to, which, you know, it might make me sad, but I'm sure I'll like them. Like, in Scoundrels, I still wish it would have been Card in charge of the whole thing, but it was good as it was. And it wouldn't have been as good if Winter and Kel weren't in it. I'm sorry.
Nope, not at all.
So, yeah. If you're going forward in the main timeline, you need a lot of new characters. Sword of the Jedi needs to introduce a bunch of new characters around Jaina's age. And if Ben is in it, they need to introduce a bunch of new characters around Ben's age. Look at Mercy Kill. You had characters that people knew, like Face and Piggy and Miri. And we didn't know Jesmyn, but we are familiar with her. But there were still a bunch of other new characters that we all liked.
And the book certainly didn't suffer for it.
No.
It was better for it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
even though I do still want a book of all the, you know, original Wraiths when they're with intelligence, but hey.
I would not say no to that book.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think I think that's something we can get are new characters.
Yes.
I think not only is that not too much to ask for, I think it's realistic, and I think there's a very good chance it happens.
Yep. And better utilization of the characters they already have.
Yeah, because you have characters like Seha, who I know Alston's basically on the record saying, I wish someone would do something with her because I created her and she's kind of just chilling out here, who, you know, pops up every now and then. You have her, you have both the Antilles girls, you have the Horn siblings, you have Doran, well, now both the Tainer siblings. You have all these characters who are in that generation between Ben and Jaina, who need to be used more. People mm-hmm. will like books if you write them about them and give them things to do. Please.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, look at the Old Republic era stuff that's being written. These are new characters. And they're working well. They're well-liked. Why can't it happen in this era? It certainly can. You just have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we'd never say no to a return of rogues and wraiths. Really, non-Jedi characters.
Yeah. Please.
Please.
Especially after Crucible, and it's you're nothing if you're not a Jedi stance.
Yeah, and Brian, you made a good point in your review that having that sort of stance makes the galaxy really, really insular. Because why are you going to bother using different other protagonists if your Jedi are that awesome?
Okay, let's use the Clone Wars as an example. The Clone Wars is great because it isn't just all Jedi.
Nope.
The Clone Wars had all sorts of great episodes that focused on the clone troopers. Some of their best episodes were episodes that were not focused on the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's return to that. Let's kind of give the universe a bit more grandeur again, and I mean, I'm not saying don't write about the Jedi, just diversify. Hey, that sounds like something we've talked about.
Diversity
yeah, is good, kids.
One of my favorite episodes of the Clone Wars was the Citadel arc that they had a Tarkin on.
Oh, such a brilliant arc.
Yeah. And I hope they do that with Rebels, where they have a lot of pilot characters, trooper characters.
So, yeah, I mean, that, and again, this is something I think they can do. And looking at this Rebel series, or the Empire and Rebellion, I think it's something they are doing. Mm-hmm. And that's gonna be great. So I'm certainly excited for that. And what the note I put in here, something else I'd like to see moving forward, are more genre books. It's weird, but last year or so, I think the best Star Wars novels have been the genre stories. You had Mercy Kill, which was the Mission Impossible spy thriller. You had Scoundrels, which is a heist caper. And now we've got Kenobi, which y'all are going to get to read in August, which is a Western. Mm-hmm. And these so brilliantly focus on the characters. They capture all of the nuances and intricacies of the characters. And that, by in and of itself, just gives these books the feeling of Star Wars, because it's getting back to the space opera roots. It's great, and I'd love to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do we want from the expanded universe as a whole, not just this era? I guess we've kind of already answered this.
But, pretty much.
Yeah. Pre-existing characters, let's focus more on them. Now that we've put the big three on the shelf in admittedly less than ideal fashion, run with it. Let's do what we thought we were going to do at the end of Unifying Force and let another generation take the helm. Let's get more books like Kenobi, books that fill in the blank, and books that can make the films better.
Yes.
But I guess we also have to address the elephant in the room now. The sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I think I'd be a lot madder about Crucible if we didn't have a sequel trilogy coming.
I don't think I could be madder about Crucible, but I valid point.
If there's one thing that would make you madder, it'd probably be the sequel trilogy not happening.
Well, if this was the end of the big three, like the last hurrah, I would have been like, you've got to be kidding me. After all they've gone through, this is their last hurrah. But knowing that there will be more of them in the sequel trilogy, hopefully, or at least there will be indication of what has happened with them that is not Crucible or the Legacy era and horrible things happening to them all the time. It would be really nice to have them skip 20 or so years of relative peace and see what happens next.
Yeah. I'm happy about the sequel trilogy just because I think the expanded universe needs a kick of some sort to open up new storytelling opportunities, and I'm not sure if they're capable of doing it by themselves anymore. So if this means overwriting a lot of things, I've come to terms with that.
Yeah, I'm going to think of this EU as having ended at the end of the Unifying Force anyway.
Yeah, and, well, yeah, it is what it is. And, of course, I guess you have to ask then, does the expanded universe still matter?
Of course it does.
It's always going to matter to someone because, you know, there are always going to be people who like it. I mean, there are people who liked Crucible, and we couldn't stand it. So, obviously, there are lots of different opinions in fandom and, you know, just in general. So, you know, saying it doesn't matter is not valid. But it's hard not to think about the fact that, you know, there's another series that's coming out that might override everything. But like we've said before, as long as you've still got the books, you can do whatever you want. You know, just because the Harry Potter movies exist doesn't mean that the books aren't the story, the real story.
Exactly. Disney's not going to send their goons to take your books off of your shelves. If those books resonated with you, if those books had meaning to you, if you enjoyed them, then they mattered. Then they counted, and you can't let anyone tell you otherwise. It doesn't matter what the sequel trilogy does. The expanded universe offered, I think, all of us listening to this podcast something of importance. For some of us, it's what kept Star Wars alive through the dark period where there was nothing.
Yep.
For others of us, it was escapism. For some of us, it was just supplemental material. But if it resonated with you, it counted, and it matters, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, and if they decide not to continue forward with this timeline because of the sequel trilogy, there's still always going to be EU, because they're going to make books based on the new trilogy. I can guarantee you that. And then, I mean, Kenobi is an intertrilogy book. Rebels is coming out. You can bet your ass they're going to be making Rebels books. You know, I think Kenobi is perfectly timed because it is exactly what the expanded universe should do.
Seriously, we've been saying this the entire show, and if you've been following me on Twitter, you know I can't shut up about this book. I'm not spoiling anything, but I can't shut up about how good it is. Kenobi is a great book, and it should be a model for how the expanded universe moves forward and how it deals with characters.
It expands the universe. It expands the characters. And it increases the movie. It makes the movies better.
And it stays true to the themes, the plots, the values, the majesty of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where Crucible ultimately went wrong. It wasn't Star Wars. It lost the plot, it lost the themes, it lost the characterization. For everything that book did wrong, Kenobi has done right. And I think a lot of fans are going to see that when they pick this book up. It is one of the most Star Wars feeling novels in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've been ripping Crucible to shreds. I know we sound very angry today. But I do want to make it clear that there's a lot of great stuff coming in the expanded universe. There's already a lot of great stuff, even in the last year. Mercicule was great. Scoundrels was great. Dawn of the Jedi, End of the Void was apparently fantastic. So good, it's on my reading list now.
Annihilation was good.
Exactly. Yes!
So, and even though I don't think it's our kind of book, I know a lot of people are looking forward to the Darth Maul book. And I'm kind of interested in it because they said there's like Plagueis and Sidious scenes, which could be interesting.
Yeah, so let's be honest. Crucible was a letdown. It was a huge letdown.
Mm-hmm.
It did not succeed in accomplishing what it should have. It should have been better than it was. That said, this book being bad isn't reason to give up on the expanded universe, because I truly believe the best is yet to come. There is so much good coming through the pipeline.
And if you give up on the expanded universe now just because of Crucible, and you don't buy books like Kenobi, you don't buy books like Razor's Edge, then the publishers might not realize that those are the sort of books that people want. It's the whole concept of voting with your wallet is what this really boils down to. So don't give up on Star Wars just because of the bad books. Yeah, so go buy the really good ones.
We say don't buy Crucible because it's not a good book. We're not saying stop buying expanded universe books. I can't encourage you enough to go pre-order Kenobi. Go buy Mercykill. Go buy Scoundrels. Go buy Dawn of the Jedi Into the Void. Go buy Annihilation. There are so many good books that have come out that you should get, that you should support, that you should buy, so you can show the folks at Del Rey and Lucasfilm that this is what we want. We want more great novels like this. Crucible isn't that book, but these other books are, and you should support them, because the expanded universe is still important to Star Wars, and we should still have a say and do our part to steer the direction it goes.
Amen.
Yeah. So say we all. Any parting thoughts?
It's really hot in my fort.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap the show there. We got a lot rantier than we planned on, and I do want to reiterate what we said earlier. This review of Crucible wasn't an attack on Troy Denning. It was an attack on Crucible. It was a deconstruction of the book, and that's always how we review things. It is never on the author. It is the book and the book alone and what is contained within the book. This book wasn't that great, but
unfortunately,
it's one book. We'll recover. We'll be fine.
One day more.
So let's wrap up there. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Head over to the blog, check out the links, and help us keep the lights on. Bria, where can we track you down?
You can find me on Twitter at ChaosBria. You can always find me writing on the blog, or you can go follow my geek fashion blog, WhiteHotRoom.com.
Fantastic. On Twitter, we have the handles at Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with at Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with at Lane Winry, LaneWinree. And Facebook, we are the Tashi Station Network. We are available on the iTunes Store. If you like what you hear, please do give us a review. It does help us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. That's the official blog of the show. Thank you for listening to another episode, and we will catch you all next week. This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.